Well, many people have asked the question, am I called to be a missionary? But fewer people have asked the deeper question, am I qualified for the work of mission? We'll talk about that with two titans of cross-cultural ministry on today's show. Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to The Missions Show, where we explore your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement. Join for another spelunking expedition through the shafts of missiology with none other than the one and only Scott W. Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And we are excited to embark on what our friend, Scott, I'm telling you this in real time, our friend here at ABWE, our director of training, E.D. Burns, eminent missiologist, he shared with me just before we started recording that he considers us to be the Joe Rogan of missions podcasts. So welcome aboard for another episode of that. And we're so glad
I know that's a compliment or a diss.
He meant it as a compliment. But if I start rambling about UFC now, you'll know why. I think he meant it as a compliment.
It could have been the Candace Owens, so thankfully.
Right. That could go a different direction. Hey, we want to let everyone know that the Missions Show is now on Patreon. So if you prefer to get your premium content, ad-free, interruption-free, and of course, the bonus content from this show, go to Missions Show, search for that in your Patreon app, and we would encourage you to join there. And frankly, we'll invite you to join that and get access to our bonus content because we're trying to do some big, exciting things, including do more live podcasting from the Missionary National Conference happening at Dallas-Fort Worth, easy for me to say, in October. But we need you to help send us there so that we can interview some of those bright lights in the world of missions. And so if you join at missionsshow.com/premium or in the Patreon app, that'll help us be able to produce more exciting, theologically rich and grounded missions content for you in the coming weeks and months. But Scott, I'm excited. Why don't you introduce today's guests, returning friends of the show, but the first time we've had both of them together in the same episode.
Well, you know Matt Bennett from Cedarville University, but you might not know that he's also in a leadership role at Reaching and Teaching International, where Ryan Robertson serves as president. And so, guys, it's so good to have you guys on and together as this dynamic duo. Even though you guys are a separate mission organization, we feel like we are kindred spirits with you guys. And so glad
Same
to
here,
have
brothers.
You on the show and thankful for this new book you've written. And we're not going to talk in detail about the book, but make sure to go out and check out A Path to Being a Missionary, Guide for the Aspiring. And I think the things that you're talking about in this book are so crucial, things that we've talked about, Alex and I, on and off the air. But I can remember dealing with missionaries as far back as I can think about in ministry who have no skills, maybe character might be questionable, but they are on the field. Why? Because they were called. And this calling that they somehow self-appointed upon themselves gives them carte blanche to do whatever they want to do on the mission field. And I feel like some of the things you're addressing in this book are kind of going directly against that question. So instead of asking the question, I'm called, what is the question we should be asking? And how did you guys come to that conclusion?
Well, sure. It was something of a collective discussion, honestly, between Ryan and I, as we realized that we had been using a previous book that we found really helpful called The Path to Being a Pastor by Bobby Jameson. We had been both individually using this in some of our process of walking alongside of brothers and sisters in our local churches who were aspiring to missions. And I think both of us said one of our favorite chapters was the first one where he raises that issue of how do we use the language of calling? Is it biblically appropriate for us to talk about having some internal sense of God's irrevocable call to a particular task, place, people, team, etc.? Or is there better language? And Bobby suggests the language of aspiring as kind of paralleled with 1 Timothy 3 is that as better language to say the calling language really should be reserved for having been sent by a congregation who's affirming some of the fittedness of not only the person, their character and convictions and competencies, but also to match with the task. And so in many ways, that's kind of what we're after, is saying let's use the language of aspiring to identify that right and proper subjective element of having a burden for the nations and being willing to go. But let's not also bind everyone else around us to saying that we've heard from God in a way that binds them to affirm something that may or may not be fully baked yet.
Ryan, do we lose anything by getting rid of the calling language?
Honestly, I get where a lot of people come from when they use the word calling, but I don't think it lines up with where we see the New Testament using the word calling. Most of the times we see it in the New Testament, it's referring to our salvation, right? We're called. My own pastor, Greg Gilbert, uses the word assigned. So he talks about different assignments in life. I prefer that because the reality is once upon a time, Matt was called to be a missionary in the Middle East, in North Africa. And he came off the field. So is he not living according to his calling anymore? Or does he have a different assignment now? Well, I would venture he has a different assignment. And I think sometimes when we use the word calling, what we're inadvertently doing is we're setting ourselves up for stress down the line when that assignment comes to an end. You get questions internally and externally. So are you not called anymore? We want to kind of just defray some of that tension that could potentially be there by just helping people use better vocabulary. So am I assigned to be a missionary? We don't know yet, but perhaps you are. And let's kind of walk down this path of assessing your qualification before we can say that you should be a missionary.
So I see a little bit, and Ryan, I'll start with you. I see a little bit of a parallel between what happens at an individual level and what happens within evangelicalism in general, which is that you have evangelical missions movements that start with a lot of zeal and enthusiasm, and then they peter off or they drift into maybe an error over here or over there. And before you know it, maybe in the name of pragmatism or effectiveness, really the faithfulness of some of those missionary movements has been lost. I think you can look at individual lives. If somebody goes to the field with a lot of zeal and enthusiasm, but doesn't have knowledge and training and proper equipping and preparation, that can happen at a personal level. But just in general, at a macro level, starting with Ryan, then going to Matt, where do you see today's modern missions movement? If that, maybe that's even an antiquated term, but the evangelical missions movement, where are we at right now? Are we gaining? Are we losing? Are we increasing in quality? Are we decreasing in quality? Help us contextualize this conversation about the types of missionaries that we send. What's happening in the world of missions? Do you see that trending the right direction or not? Starting with you, Ryan.
I'm encouraged. Over the last 6 months, I've had a number of conversations about the amount of theologizing that's now going on in missiology. And I think that's been a long time coming. I think there are a lot of different reasons that ecumenicism took the day over 100 years ago. But here we are, I would say, starting with Piper in the 90s, and you've got Sproul even before him. You've got young Reformed and restless guys growing up and becoming pastors and faithfully ministering in pulpits through the Word of God. And I'm seeing now, even in missions literature that's coming out now, more theologizing that's been done in the past, where it was more sociological than theological. And we don't want to swing to an extreme, but that encourages me. And so I think the missionaries that we're seeing now are theologizing extremely well and understand the appropriate way to contextualize. I think that's a good thing. At the same time, I understand that we're just experiencing a corner of evangelicalism, and on the macro level, a lot of the concerns that I would say I've had looking back over the last 115 years are still present. A lot of agencies, not ABWE, praise God, not reaching and teaching, praise God. But there's a lot of agencies that are sending young, under-equipped, unqualified, or not yet qualified individuals to go do the work of the ministry that I'm very concerned that we're going to continue to see cycles of burnout. And that's so on a larger scale, I'm still perplexed that we haven't learned lessons. But on a micro scale, at least amongst the Reformed camp, I'm really encouraged at the theologizing that's going on.
And Matt, what would you add to that, given your unique situation working at the undergraduate level, training young missions-minded people? Are you seeing the same things that Ryan is?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, what we're not seeing is anything new. I think there's just a return to what I think, if you just read the New Testament, the centrality of the local church as both the guardian of doctrine and the faith once delivered for all the saints, and also the display of what happens when the manifold wisdom of God is made known to bring Jew and Gentile, black and white, you know, Houthi and, you know, whoever together under the same gospel, that there's something about the lifting high of ecclesiology in a thick way that actually makes sense according with the warp and woof of the New Testament as we read it. And so it's starting to infuse anybody who's listening. And I do see that at the undergraduate level, people coming in from a number of different church experiences and backgrounds who are learning, you know, the basics and the foundations of their own faith and theology, who hear, hey, the Bible, God really does cherish this entity he calls his bride. And the local expressions really are important to how he, by the Spirit and the proclamation of this word, is advancing his purposes in the world. People get it. And so I think along with a thickened theology in missiology, the centering of ecclesiology is a healthy trend that I am encouraged about.
So many churches want to send missionaries, thankfully. What I've seen is that there's a couple of ditches. You know, on the one hand, a pastor might look at the missionary task and think it's so different than his task that he has no ability to speak into that. Or on the other side, maybe he's been, you know, to Uganda and taught some classes in a seminary there, you know, twice, you know, for 2 weeks, and therefore he's eminently qualified to understand the missionary task. Putting it into summation, there, churches just don't do a great job at evaluating missionaries and potential future missionaries. So if you were to tinker under the hood a little bit, you know, what are some changes that you would like to see churches make in the way that they assess the potential missionary and his fitness for missions? And what one change would make the biggest difference in your mind?
That's a great question, Scott. I would say the change that I would make is not to take for granted that somebody who wants to be a missionary is immediately qualified just based on their desire alone. And so I'm encouraged, like the very fact, Scott, that the question is premised on how can churches do this well shows the shift in the conversation, because often the whole assessment was given out to missions agencies in the past.
True.
And in this church-centered movement that we're in, to use that word, I'm really encouraged that agencies like ABWE and others are saying, hey, we want to hear the church's assessment of this candidate's fittedness. So I would just start with, just because someone is willing does not mean that they're able. And so what we've designed the resource that we wrote to do is walk pastors, missions committee members and such, but ultimately under the authority of the pastors themselves, to walk people through a number of questions that should help come to the conclusion of, is there competency and character and qualification there? And if not, is it something that that person can grow into or not?
Honestly, I think even to dovetail into the previous question of where some encouragement, I think things like the missions show, you guys, what you've been doing just to slow drip some of these reflections into the discourse at the level of podcast or, you know, the show and syndicated entity that you've become on your cable programs here. I think things like that have been a real encouragement, and they have helped to put resources in churches' hands where they hear that clarion call, that instinctive sense of, yeah, we have some responsibility in this. But with busy plates, they're like, well, where do we start? And I think, again, like Ryan said, the goal of this book is not to say the last word on any one of the given chapters, but really to be a springboard into conversation to help generate the same sorts of discussions that should be natural if they had the bandwidth to sit down and think through what would we expect of a missionary. And I think maybe something as simple as just saying not all missionaries need to be elders or, you know, formally appointed as deacons, but those categories really shouldn't be something considered anything more than a decent threshold for our measure of is somebody ready. If we wouldn't appoint them as a deacon in our church, should we be considering laying hands on them and supporting them to go somewhere else? That's a telling question, and it throws back to processes that are already in place for developing deacons and elders and things that most churches have.
Yeah, we've recently worked through a process in our trainings at ABWE to think through, if we were to divide every missionary up, who needs the elder level of qualification and training, who needs the deacon level, and maybe there's supporting workers that are deacon assistants, right? But pretty much everyone should fall into one of those three categories. So let's make it very practical. Let's talk about maybe some of the areas of qualification that we don't typically look into. Matt, I'll throw it to you next. But in the book, you talk about character, conviction, you talk about competency, you know, that of course you need three C's and it has to alliterate. And there's a poem at the end because we're all Baptists here. But however you want to define each of those categories, which of those would you say is maybe neglected by churches or by agencies or individuals taking inventory of their own lives when it comes to assessing whether or not we're qualified? What are we usually missing in the qualification conversation?
I mean, frankly, most churches probably are going to be at least initially wondering if they have anything to say to the competency piece, because it's all cross-cultural, right? So I think our hope in that was to be able to redirect and say, well, there are some instincts and some natural propensities that you can measure before somebody gets on a plane, to be able to say, you know, are they curious people? Are they willing to laugh at themselves, take the gospel seriously, but not themselves too seriously? But I think probably to answer the question most directly, I think the idea of conviction is probably the place where we put the least amount of emphasis. I think that typically, if you just imagine somebody being proposed as a candidate at a lot of churches that we're familiar with, the biggest commendation people will get are, man, they're so nice. Like they're really good people. And like we lean into some of those character qualifications. We lean into their willingness to go and how much we appreciate that. But to say like, well, can they explain the Trinity would almost like put people on their heels. Like, well, I mean, come on. They're just going to share the gospel, right? Like those people need the gospel. They don't need like, you know, Fred Sanders to come and extrapolate the intricacies of the Trinity. But I think for us to pause and stop and say, well, actually, yeah, they do. Because how many mission fields were the places where heresy got promoted because of a little bit of nuance or unfamiliarity with the whole scope of scripture and a distortion of one biblical emphasis over and against another? I mean, I actually think it's deeply important for us to say, if we're going to send people to be the tip of the spear in places where their answer on how do we understand this verse is going to be taken as gospel truth, well, I want that to be a well thought out, well reasoned, biblically sound and theologically rich answer that they're going to give. So I think that second section of convictions is probably the one that we do the least amount of investing in.
Ryan, what about you? What would the maybe gap in people's understanding be? Is it conviction? Are there other stones that are typically left not unturned in the process of assessing candidates?
Well, one of the things that I always want to drill down first, it's the first chapter that we wrote on, was the primary motivation. So oftentimes in missions mobilization conversations, and Alex, you're involved in communications. What do we hear most often in mobilization? The greatest need in the world today, the greatest problem in the world today is lostness, which immediately puts the impetus on a man-centered issue. Mm. We're lost without Christ. And that's true, but I think it's a secondary motivation to the first motivation, which is the glory of God. And so one of the things that I want pastors to do in their pastoral care and counseling of prospective missionaries is drive home that the main reason that they're sending or looking at sending that person overseas isn't the lostness of individuals, though that's a true motivating factor. It's primarily because God is not being glorified by the tongues of the very people that he has created in his image. And Having that right prioritization will help that church care for that missionary in the long run. It will help that missionary stay in the field in the long run. And when inevitably the sin of the people they're ministering to starts to rub up against them and cause friction, they won't become disenchanted with the people that they're ministering to, because they're being driven by the glory of God. And so that's what I want to say in all of this is, yes, competency, absolutely. Convictions, yes. Character, so important. But if you're going because people are lost, instead of going first and foremost because God is not being glorified and deserves to be worshiped by all of his creation, there's some work to be done there. And I want pastors to take the lead in that.
We have a good question on creativity and innovation that I think we maybe should save for the overtime episode, just a little bit of a teaser, because I think that's a good fourth C to think about, but how do we do that appropriately? But suppose someone finishes your book and they're not presently qualified for missionary service. They might look at it and go like, I'm just not there yet. And I know people like that, you know, they have this desire, but they know they're just not ready. How would you encourage them to view that conclusion? And what should the next 5 years look like if they genuinely desire to serve overseas someday? Why don't you start, Matt, since you're working with students like that right now, probably.
Yeah, I think our desire, even as you say, 5 years, our desire would be that the ideal reader of this book would be a couple things. One, somebody who's not reading it in isolation. We want them to read it alongside of an older brother or sister, somebody in leadership in the church who can work through chapter by chapter and springboard these conversations to say, okay, what do you need in order to get these competencies to where they need to be, or these convictions tooled up to the place where you can rightly divide the word of truth? And so we want them to be doing it in not alone in their room, but in a conversation with somebody who can help them think through it. And then secondly, we'd love for the ideal reader of this book to be somebody who is 5 years out from the mission field, so that they don't feel this sense of overwhelming, well, I'm not there, so I'll never get to go, but that they start reading this saying, okay, in these three buckets of consideration, my character, my convictions, and my competencies, what are the big rocks that I need to invest in over the next 6, 9, 12 months? And how do then we help sort that and do it in a way that's being overseen by the people I'm in covenant fellowship with, who hopefully one day would be the ones to say, we've watched them progress and we've seen the Lord working in their life, and this zeal is now matched with ability, and the fittingness is something it's just obvious to all who've been around them that it's time to lay hands on and send.
Well, I'd love to hear, maybe as we wrap up, as Scott mentioned, there's this fourth C of creativity. So there's a lot of discussion in the missions world now about BAM, businesses mission, about, you know, digital nomads and creative ways of gaining access into a country, a context, bring innovative strategies. You know, we had Ted Esler on a long while back talking about innovation, right? Does innovation belong in missions? And I think that's an entire separate conversation that we'll save for those that are Patreon subscribers, as we mentioned, those who subscribe also through missionsshow.com/premium. But let me just ask as we wrap up real quick, what's maybe one thing that you've sort of changed your mind about over the years, maybe even in the process of putting this book together, a new area of understanding that opened up, something that through your experience, the people you've been working with, the experience that you had on the field, you know, you thought one thing about calling and qualification coming in, but you learned that the truth, the reality, is actually what? And I'd love for both of you guys to share that just briefly. Also, just remind us at the end how people can get a copy of this new book.
Man, I'm just talking about creativity. I think one of the things that young, zeal-filled candidates for missions get most excited about is the, I wonder what it's going to be like to minister the gospel and see disciples made over there, because it's surely going to be different. And that desire for creativity and something new and fresh, I think, is a big thing, matched with a desire for celebrating the diversity of the various cultures of the world, is typically something that we get a hefty dose of in our society. And so getting to the field and thinking about contextualization as primarily what forms and new ways of being church are we going to get to participate in, it can distract the conversation to looking at how do we respond to or retrofit the existing culture into something that looks more like the Bible, as opposed to primarily seeing contextualization as a communication issue. How do we textualize this community such that they hear the word saying what it intends to say, where it confronts them and tells them their idolatries are off base, and where it comforts them and speaks in coherence with things they already know? And so I think for me, in some ways, growing through my own missiology, a return to some of the Hesselgravian approaches to contextualization that really just see it as communication is probably one of the biggest things.
I would say personally, not so much in the writing of the book, but getting to the place where I think I was ready to write the book. I grew up as in my young adult years in an environment in which to aspire to the role of elder was sometimes, most often, seen as disqualifying. Kind of in this kind of the quote unquote humility focus of the last two decades. I'm thinking like 2005, 2015, and the interpretation that some of the men that I loved dearly who were elders at the time, where I would hear them talk about someone who aspired to something like being an elder was somehow hinting at some underlying pride. And that took years to work out in my own life, searching my own heart, because I aspired to one day be an elder. So I think just getting ready to write this book and to encourage a generation of missionaries, it is good and right to aspire to take the name of Christ to the ends of the earth and to hold to elder and deacon qualifications. That's a good aspiration. And just writing this with Matt and being able to observe Matt up close over the last number of years, and he's the prototypical candidate for me of who we're writing this book for, this next generation. And it was encouraging to do so. In terms of where you can buy the book, I know you asked that, Alex. It's available on Amazon. It's available on 10 of those. I know Nine Marks has a bundle sale available as well. So anywhere where you buy your Christian books, they should have it.
All right. Well, the name of the book is The Path to Being a Missionary, A Guide for the Aspiring. And in our overtime segment, which we're about to record, we'll talk more about if some of these new access gaining strategies are helping or if they're distracting us from the core of what it means to be qualified as a missionary. So you don't want to go anywhere. You want to stay for that and get access again through Patreon or missionsshow.com/premium. But Ryan, Matt, thank you both for being here with us. Always good to have both of you gentlemen back on the show. And a reminder that the Missions Show is a ministry of ABWE, which is a global family of ministries reaching more than 90 nations. We would encourage you to check out ABWE at abwe.org. When you're a part of our premium family, you can also join the group chat and be a part of a growing community of like-minded, sharp missiological voices and people that are taking the concepts that we discuss here, working them out in real time in their ministries, in their churches, in their preparation for the field, and their ministry today on the field as well. And so to invite you to be a part of that as well. And so for now, from all of us here, go make disciples of all the nations.